Cooper, the latest GEM report is out. Perhaps you could tell me, first of all, what GEM is.
Yes, GEM is the Global Entrepreneurship Monitor. It's a program that undertakes surveys in about 70 countries at the present to find out about the activities of individual entrepreneurs. It's studying entrepreneurship from the point of view of the entrepreneur as an individual operating in an ecosystem of the society, rather than looking at the data about firms.
So when we look how Canada's doing this year, how do we stack up against the rest of the world?
We can be claiming number one.
Whoa!
At least among developed countries. Very often there are very high entrepreneurship rates in underdeveloped situations because of the fact that there are relatively fewer opportunities for employment. In an innovation-driven economy, which is the category GEM uses for the developed economies like U.S. and Canada and the European members of G7, in these economies, jobs are comparatively plentiful, so actually entrepreneurship rates are somewhat lower.
So how would you define entrepreneurship then for the purposes of GEM?
Well, we try ultimately to give it a fairly general definition. The largest part of our survey is looking at entrepreneurship as the process of creating a new economic venture. But that can happen either with an individual setting out to create a new company, or it can happen by an individual being the lead for creating a major novelty within an established corporation. And beyond that, of course, there is social entrepreneurship. And I'd like to suggest that we probably can also talk about something called environmental entrepreneurship is probably a subcategory.
Oh, tell me about that.
Well, we did a special topic a couple of years ago where we asked about dimensions of social entrepreneurship, and a great many of the things that came through in that survey were things that were primarily oriented at environmental improvements. And interestingly enough, a very substantial fraction of them were in effect businesses, in that the largest part of their funding came from their sale of goods and services.
When you look at this year's report for Canada on entrepreneurship, what would you say are the things that stand out? What's one of the big highlights?
Well, certainly I think it starts from something that is in fact fairly widely distributed with the innovation-driven economies, and that is that there's a very generally positive attitude on the part of the general population. People see opportunities for entrepreneurship. They believe they have the skills to undertake it, and they think that successful entrepreneurs enjoy very high social status. So there's no problem about creating a culture of entrepreneurship, which is probably something that one would have to expect given that Canada now stands as number one in the rate of entrepreneurship in the innovation-driven economies.
So that seems as though it's an indication that people are fairly confident in stepping out on their own and becoming entrepreneurs.
Yes, they are. And to some extent, this is a two-edged sword, because we also try to find out something about the environment the entrepreneurs are going to face by doing a survey of people from 9 different professions that give them a professional perspective on entrepreneurship, and ask them to talk about how they see the conditions for an entrepreneur. And one of the things that they focus on is a lack of adequate education for entrepreneurship, starting in the public school system and carrying on into post-secondary education, although they rate the post-secondary situation somewhat better.
Over the last few years, there's certainly been a lot of talk about financial education and entrepreneurship education in the school systems and starting off really at a younger age. But do you see that actually happening? Is the talk turning into action?
Well, I can really only speak about the post-secondary situation, but certainly, yes, there is action going on. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if this isn't also occurring in the primary and secondary systems. Although I must say what I would emphasize in the earlier grades is, and more generally, is that what the population as a whole, I think, should get in their educational experience, not necessarily a detailed training for starting a business, but achieving an entrepreneurial thinking approach to whatever area in which they are working.
Could you explain that a bit more, what you mean by that, the entrepreneurial thinking?
That there is a continuing effort to recognize in your environment where there's an opportunity to do something somewhat differently or in a different context than it's been being done. In a way, it's really saying that you think with innovation in the center.
Your report has found that there's certainly a high degree amongst young people to look towards entrepreneurship. What did you find there?
We did find the same high rates compared to other countries. And within Canada, if I chose 40 as the dividing line, then the margin of the overall entrepreneurship would lie on the younger side of 40, which is a shorter time frame than our time frame, 40 plus, because unlike most other countries, we do survey seniors as well as people up to what GEM internationally calls the working age limit of 65.
Of course, we know that doesn't hold true anymore, does it? So with the younger people looking more and more towards entrepreneurship or basically creating their own work, is that really what that's all about? Is they've given up on the system of going out and getting a job with another company and having to rely on their own resources to make a living?
I don't think that people have really given up on going out and getting a job and working for a company. But certainly I think we're seeing a very high fraction of the people in this population range considering independent entrepreneurship as an option. When we look at the figures, for example, for the most vague question we ask, which is, do you have any idea that you would be possibly undertaking entrepreneurship in the next 3 years? We're coming in at around a quarter of the population.
So you said that you're working on the Alberta report now. What do you expect that to involve?
Well, basically, it will be dealing with more or less the same issues as the national report, but extracting the data specifically for Alberta respondents.
Now, these reports, you've had several over the last few years. How can these be used in terms of setting a direction or providing guidelines for policymaking to the federal and provincial governments?
Well, the first thing that I would call attention to is that it's not a problem for government policy to help create an entrepreneurial culture. It's there. What policy needs to do is to look for ways in which the more productive kinds of entrepreneurship can be encouraged. As one well-known American scholar puts it, he says, the issue is not finding winners, but it's relatively easy to pick losers.
So how do you overcome that?
Well, you overcome it by thinking more carefully about what information and what approaches are involved in deciding that the government can provide assistance. And here, one of the things that I'd call attention to is, in general, the agencies of government that have the specific mandate to look at smaller businesses or entrepreneurial activity are not the place where we have a problem. It's that other departments of government, defense, health, agriculture, tend never to have the term entrepreneurship come into their thinking about what sort of activities they're sporting.
So could you explain that a little bit more?
Well, let me take government procurement as an example. In the U.S., the Defense Department has a policy that says a certain fraction of their research budget for development in the private sector must go to small and medium-sized firms. I know of no parallel to that in Canada.
Well, that certainly would provide a certain basis or foundation to help support people who are in business or building up their businesses.
Yes, and in fact, you know, even in the private sector, I have discovered around Calgary interesting examples of a situation where one of the large companies from, well, take the oil and gas industry as the most active participant, have needed something, have funded a smaller company to supply that need because it wasn't their core business, and then that smaller company has been able to take off with that product and direction.
There's an awful lot of talk these days and focus on innovation and developing an innovation economy. But do you see that there's a little bit of a disconnect between entrepreneurship and innovation?
Yes. And again, the American scholar I was quoting with his smart remark points out that entrepreneurship may be, in fact, counterproductive. For example, if there are already four pizza parlors in a neighborhood, the fifth pizza parlor may make it impossible for all of them to survive. So there is a limit to just creating new companies or new activities. And on the innovation side, one of the things that we don't talk about enough is that innovation can be not just productive, but it can also be destructive. What can innovation do? Well, if you look at, say, in a historical example, innovation in the automobile industry, put the buggy whip manufacturers out of business. At the same time, the automobile creates a variety of environmental problems we have to deal with. And that's almost characteristic of innovation. When I teach about innovation, one of the things that I emphasize is that there are always unintended consequences.
When you sum up the report, the results that you got from this year's, how does that apply to innovation?
Well, there are two ways that the survey measures fairly directly innovative tendencies. One is to look at the question of whether the entrepreneurs see their product or service as novel or unfamiliar. In other words, this is really something new, and that's pretty direct. And the second one is, are there a lot of other firms that offer something competitive with this? And again, that gets us pretty directly to something innovative. And in both of those respects, although being quite novel and having no competitors is not something that's true of anything like the majority of firms anytime, Canada's responses stand very well in comparison to others. And the other one is the correlate that's often made between the tendency of firms to use up-to-date technology and their tendency to be innovative. And the firms in Canada, again, it's a subgroup, but it's a strong subgroup that tends to use quite up-to-date technology.
Thank you very much, Cooper.
Oh, you're quite welcome.